that has big time camp. What the movie will be the ultimate champ. You might be finger crazy, my finger diseased, but do you watch another chance to find the best of this?
We rate each movie in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
It's Stan, Gene, Jack and Nick who watch it till it's finished, because the love for this movie can be diminished. And make the film's plot has no rhyme or reason, but that's a part of charm.
Colin Brad is off the season.
It's low budget film that is most true. They find a flick that monster boogaloo.
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Are you ready to It's season 7. The Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo presents free mustache rides. I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu. Happy to be with you again today. Season 7. It feels like just yesterday we were doing season 6. But here we are again. And so excited to be here and joined by my good friends. I've got Jim.
I'm just brushing out my mustache, getting ready.
Excellent, excellent. Are you curling it around? Who's got the curling mustache? I bet you that's Nick.
Greetings and salutations. I was unaware that we had to get ready to mustache.
Oh,
just a constant state of mustache readiness. That's what Nick has.
Yes. Okay. Well, and Jack, how about your mustache?
Well, that's it. I'm wondering, did Nick not realize you had to grow a mustache before recording? That was one of our rules for the season?
It's important.
Hey, where else would I keep my lunchtime snack other than my mustache?
It's a stash. You stash in your stash.
That's right.
There you go.
What's the stash and mustache? That's right.
Well, and this time around, we're bringing out the free mustache rides, and to start out, we've got some Malibu Express, one of those Andy Sidaris films that, and now the mustache in this case is from Nick, and it's Darby Hinton, and I'll agree, Darby Hinton in this movie, that's a good mustache.
Oh yeah. He has a great stash. Yeah, not much else, which explains his career, but...
He steps out of the car and he turns to the camera kind of slowly and then he stops, and then the camera pans in on him and has this nice stop, you know, on him, and like hey, look at our handsome star. And I immediately thought, good Lord, that is a fantastic lip sweater right there.
Well, Nick, why don't you tell us about Malibu Express and his lip sweater?
All right. This movie, if you care about plot, this is maybe not the movie for you. Because it only has enough story to get you between sets of breasts.
It does it that.
We already said it was an Andy Sidaris movie.
Yeah. I mean, they're trying really hard to, like, and that I think that's it. You know, I know you're going, but, like, damn, they really want to convince us that there is a plot.
But, yes, and it's convincing enough as long as you lose all focus whenever a set of breasts turn out, which has worked for me on this movie for years. But knowing I had to explain this movie, I had to pay attention, and I realized it doesn't make any sense.
Okay, Nick, how many times have you seen it?
Oh, hundreds. This is in a fairly even rotation with Crank 2. Once again, movies that you can just put on and then, you know, just fade in and out of. Just background movies. Not ones you actually sit down and watch. But... this movie, our star is Kobe Abilene, who's a private investigator who is questionable in all his skills, but he's a good-looking man, and He is hired by a mysterious government agency to investigate a family that may or may not be selling the Russians computer secrets or computers that have secrets on them. And
or just must, computers altogether.
Or computers.
Or just computers. It seems at one point it's just like the hardware is all they're selling them.
Yeah, because the Russians haven't figured out how to make a computer.
Does that explain the opening credits sequence where it's just this old woman typing at a computer? Is that what this is about then? Do we actually? Because I was trying to figure out what the hell that was.
That was
awesome.
The Matrix just stole that entire thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, that was a creative way to get around a budget concerns. Those credits look damn good for the time period and the budget.
You would know, having watched it. Did you see this one in the theater, Nick?
No, I didn't. I saw this one late night. I think it was TBS or TNT, hosted by Joe Bob. Joe Bob, what's his name?
Joe Bob Briggs, the great Joe Bob Briggs. So it would have probably been, I think that would have been TNT, though. They wouldn't have had the breath, though.
TNT sounds right. Well, TNT would have, but it was TBS that was
that's right.
Family
okay.
stuff. Yeah, so TNT would have, yeah.
Okay.
So all I really remember about that viewing of it is Joe Bob would pop up and say, hey, how about those boobies or headlights?
if he popped up every time you saw them.
Oof, boy. This
movie. Yeah, he was in it a lot.
you'd have to cut this out to about a three-hour time slot.
As I can tell you from having seen Joe Bob talk about this movie a couple times myself, he counts 72 breasts in his count, because he always does the count of the different things. Like, there's Bimbo Foo and
isn't that close to isn't that close to the total we saw in the entire second season of this podcast?
I think so. 72, and he says, "What was it, Miss Knockers or whatever? She could count as four, so that could put 70 something like that."
June Knockers.
She was one of my favorites.
June Knockers is an incredible name.
Yeah. What amazes me about this movie is the evenly spacing of the nudity. At no one time do you get, because normally when you get nudity like this, it happens like either at the beginning of the movie and then it's absent for a whole long stint, or it happens at the end of the movie and you have to wait through all the like so-called plot. But no, you can count like almost on commercial breaks.
Yeah, it's true.
Have a decent nude scene.
Yeah, some movies offer clusters, like nude clusters, where it's just like, oh, they go to the strip club, or oh, they do this, and oh, they do that. This one, there was so many points out there where it was like, I didn't see a reason for nudity, but they sure did.
Well, that's it. They don't need a reason for nudity. This film is that the camera's on, you know, like,
I mean, one of the greatest scenes has no place. I mean, the two girls on the boat, they have no business in this movie, but I'm so glad they are.
Oh, I love it.
Okay.
They just break onto his boat and start showering together.
You need to explain the actual movie. We never did that.
Some sort of summary. Give the audience something to grab onto.
I actually thought I did. Cody Abilene investigates this family for perhaps having selling secrets to the Russians, and women take their tops off.
A lot, yeah.
And
it gets wrapped up at the end. I can't tell you for sure if he caught anyone, to tell you the truth.
he comes off at the end. He does wind up coming off really smart, even though there's no good reason. With most mysteries, you can kind of play along and figure it out. In this case, it's just like it shows up and you're kind of like, I don't know how you put that together, but I'm glad somebody did.
They pretty much get to the end and everyone just stands around, decides to stop talking about it. like, okay, so we can't pin this on anyone. So let's just call it a day. And everyone goes
separate
ways.
Great thing. They had somebody. It was perfectly logical. And then they went, wait, that's not it. And then they had a scene at the boat 5 minutes at the end. Like of him explaining everything in the movie, trying to make you think that there was a plot. I think we've already decided they managed to pull out 100 minutes of movie with 100 seconds worth of plot.
And you really didn't
with
miss
nearly
it.
100 breaths.
Did anyone miss the plot?
God, no. This was one of my favorite
movies.
At no
time was
ever.
I watching the movie going, I wish this made more sense.
It didn't need to make sense because they were so earnest in their attempt at a plot. It was the fact that Darby Hinton was out there, and it's just like his Cody Abilene character was a character. There was no, like, he was this private eye who was really terrible at shooting things and just
carried his gun in a cool ass briefcase.
Yep.
And, man, what a gun, by the way.
Oh god.
What
yeah.
a gun.
44 Magnum. I mean, and he randomly quoted Clint Eastwood badly. and everybody wanted to take their clothes off for him, and it didn't
man.
And like
this guy just walking around his panty remover.
Let's not forget, there's the point where he's in the desert, walks along and finds a used car lot with a woman who immediately just takes off her top. And then he gets back to his apartment and he complains his car got destroyed, he had to get a new car, and he got raped. Just casually. It's unbelievable.
He's not only a hero in the movie, he's a hero in real life.
That's right.
No question. No question. You keep watching this movie thinking, man, there's going to be some action sooner or later, right? Like, a movie like this has to have action. And every time that they went, you know, we should probably have some action here, but that sounds like it would take a lot of effort. Throw some breaths on the screen.
Yeah, it's a movie that should not work in any way, shape, or form. And yet from like 5 minutes in, I was completely hooked and just happily engaged throughout the entire movie.
There are even setups for action, though. The whole car race family that just drives up out of nowhere and keeps challenging him to a race. You'd think that was going like at least to like a fun payoff.
The Buffingtons.
Oh my god.
Yeah, there's no payoff to it. They just keep showing up.
Bobo Buffington. The names in this movie are fantastic. Don't forget Maid Marian.
Oh, and they show up and race him like two or three times in the movie and beat him every time. Like that's the weirdest part for me is that they keep challenging him and having already beat him. They continue to show up and challenge him to race.
Especially because they start off saying that they always challenge him and never win. And then they proceed to win every time. Like, what's going on here?
Oh, man.
And I was very happy to see what was his name? Shane, was it Shane in this movie? Brett Baxter Clark. Who, of course, I remember from Bachelor Party as the guy with the wiener.
Wait, Shane was the butler, right?
And in Bachelor Party, he's the guy who lays out the wiener, his wiener in the bun in the Bachelor Party scene.
Nice.
And you know what? The same facial expression through both movies. It never changed once.
Former starting safety for the Atlanta Falcons in the NFL.
Thank God. I was just hoping he didn't go to Juilliard or something. He was not a good actor.
No. He's a terrible actor.
Did anyone else get that line where his lover or whatever asked, what did a guy like you get do in prison? And he says, ate a lot of furniture.
Yes.
And it's like, my God, he's bragging about taking it up the ass.
Yeah, I never heard that expression before. Let me Google that. Hold on.
you Google that. I don't want to.
You want to start an incognito window. I don't know if you want that tracked.
Urban Dictionary, eating furniture. That must. You guys go on.
So I want to describe. So he lives on a houseboat, and
the marina. Eat furniture means get big.
Oh,
what?
Yeah. According to Urban top definition, that guy is in the basketball tournament. He must eat a lot of furniture. He's huge. So that's okay. A steroid, that, basically.
That's how it's used now. I mean, it's been, you know, close to 35 years since this movie came out.
Okay.
You might want to go a little deeper on Urban Dictionary, which I don't know if you know this. It's voted on by anonymous people.
I know.
Who can vote multiple times.
All right. We'll do it in on Keg.Nito mode so I can, my safety filters are off. You guys keep going.
I was trying. So he lives on a houseboat and at the marina. Before you get to the houseboat, there is a painting of the caboose of a train on a big plywood board in front of the boat for reasons I'm assuming have to something to do with production, but I can't figure out exactly what.
Well, they explained he explains it as part of the story.
He explains it as part of the story, but it makes no, he says it's because his mom got killed by a train. So he wants to constantly remember a train going by.
Well, and his dad liked trains, loved trains.
No, his mom liked trains.
Okay. What
I'd like to know is why it is that the. And by the way, I still can't find anything but that as what it means. I'd like to know what it is that the people at the beginning are complaining, because his dad started this club that he's in, but they want that boat gone. And I'm like, why do they want that boat gone? That's a gorgeous boat.
No, they didn't want the boat gone.
They wanted the painting gone.
Oh, okay. I don't even remember a painting.
I also got the sense that Cody was not wealthy because he slept with all their daughters. But that's subtext.
That's the kind of subtext you only get when you've seen it 100 times.
That's right, yeah.
Well, Joe Bob Briggs does every time he say the movie goes, I still don't know why it's called Malibu Express. I can't figure that out. I'm like, well, that's the painting. Considering that's the title, it really has nothing to do with the movie.
No, it's not even like his car was named the Malibu Express or even his gun. I would have accepted any of those things for sure.
I do wonder if here's my theory. Everyone put forward a theory once called the Malibu Express. My theory is they came up with the poster and name first and then had this whole movie and like, well, we got to jam the name in somewhere.
I do like that. That is a great poster. I like to think it existed before the movie.
It is like a very James Bondy type. It looks like an Octopussy.
Oh yeah,
poster.
Yeah. I mean, that would be absolutely it. I would like Andy Sidaris is sitting around like Malibu Express. I like that. Let's make a movie.
I actually think he just wanted to take a vacation in Malibu, and this movie was the excuse.
Well, and it's distributed by Malibu Bay Films. So,
well, I'm sure they took, this is the first Andy Sidaris movie.
Yeah. Well, so I mean, his first,
it's not his first. It's the first
I thought it was his first because he directed, I believe he directed CBS Sports or something like that for years, but he wasn't in like film production.
Well, this, I mean,
third feature.
Yeah, in the wiki, it says the material from the film was reworked from a previous Sidaris film, Stacy, from 1973.
That's the one that Roger Corman and him co-produced, I think.
I like my story better. But if the truth contradicts, that's okay.
It's still like I would look at this and say that it's like the first of the girls, guns, and G-strings Andy Sidaris movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is. It is. It's not totally like there. You know, I mean, it's not like I think the Cody character in one of the other movies is referenced as like the cousin, if I remember correctly.
Oh, I believe there's a star in every one of the movies that is named Abilene.
Yeah, something like that. Like that's nice. That's the connection.
Nice.
If you want to have an actual connection, like that's a lot of that's more effort than Sedaris usually puts in.
And you know what? Hey, it's enough of a connection for me.
How many is in the series? 12? That's in like his.
No, it's more than that. I think
it's at least 12. It might be 13. I don't know if the Dallas connection, which is directed by his son, is actually in the series. I've never seen that one, but it stars Julie Strain, so it should. I should see that.
Well, the girls, guns, and
anyone want to stop so I can watch the Dallas connection? I can.
The girls, guns, and G-strings collection is 12. So,
is it on Tubi?
I think the vast majority of them.
Yeah,
are.
I think the majority for sure. Yeah. I want to talk about his hard-boiled detective narration.
Oh boy!
So Cody starts the hard-boiled narration a couple of minutes into the movie. At 6 minutes in, he's recording into a micro cassette recorder, and at 6 minutes in, he begins summarizing the first 5 minutes of the film, including the scene where he starts talking into the recorder.
Oh man. And there is some terrible syncing going on of that.
I'd like to remind you guys, 100 minutes. This thing went 100 minutes.
I love that. I mean, the most consistent thing of him talking to the recorder is explaining the plot to the people who have drifted away during commercial breaks or something.
I have watched a lot of these films, and I have to say this is the most coherent one because of that. I appreciate that narration.
When did at a certain point though the narration stopped? Right? It felt like I don't remember it being narrated anymore.
Lost the cassette recorder or something. Yeah. Body by Fisher, brains by Mattel. Oh, you gotta.
He also didn't really explain why he was narrating anything. He just said it was because he got a new microset recorder.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like it was supposed to. It was that whole idea of he's supposed to be a private eye, therefore this is what you're supposed to do as a private eye.
There's a lot of logic in this movie that is just logic. Borrowed from other movies. You know, we have the car racing scenes because that happened in a different, similar movie.
Well,
and
we
have the narration because that is a trope of the hard-boiled genre.
But I know what you mean. Like, okay, like the detective is Magna P.I. The racing against the rednecks, that's friggin' what do you call it? Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, really? Like, I was going with Better Off Dead, but...
It's Dukes of Hazzard. But, you know, either way, it's like, yeah, like it's well, I guess it's everything. Like, it's just, it is, like it's everything thrown together. You know, almost like they didn't have much plot.
And you know what? I didn't mind.
And Andy Sedaris will admit they didn't have much plot. If you watch his interviews he did with Joe Bob Briggs, like there's a point where Joe Bob Briggs says, this one has a lot of plot. Like he's talking about the movie Guns or something like that. He's like, it had quite a bit of plot. He's like, yeah, I think I put this one together 20, 30 minutes. So it had more than all the movies. Like he's hilarious. He's incredible. He's just laughing and he's going, and then he's talking about, so I put together this other movie and then it didn't have much plot. And so the wife was complaining that we needed some of that, you know, and so she took 5 minutes and put in some plot for me and that was good. Like, the guy's unbelievable. It was the best.
The breasts were all spectacular though. Usually you have some misshapen ones when you have this quantity in a movie.
Well, it doesn't hurt that almost every one of them was a Playboy Playmate.
No, that does not hurt.
I love the two girls who are his next door neighbors at the at the marina who drop by a couple of times and become very friendly with because again, Cody, total panda remover. Just as soon as they're like, "Hey, you live next to us. I think we should have a threesome."
May and May.
But I love. There's a scene where the two of them are in the shower together, and one of the girls just stares directly into the camera lens through the whole scene.
Yeah, just waiting to be told what to do.
Strangely, I did not notice that.
I'm sorry, I wasn't looking at her face either. I wasn't looking to see what she was looking. Awesome.
Well, maybe uncomfortable. I was watching her and she was watching me.
All right. Well, what do you say we go to the scoring of this this wonderful piece of
without
cinema
talking
history?
About the helicopter car chase? Unless it's going to come up there. How can we not?
I think there may be an opportunity for it to come up there.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. If it is, that's not me.
I mean, feel free to talk about anything you want to talk about.
All right. Let's go to scoring. So welcome back to a whole new season. In our search for the ultimate B movie, we rate every film in five categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category is called Schlock Appeal, and we start with Stan.
Wow. I mean, this movie is just... I was so happy watching this movie because it gave me all of the things that I wanted to see in the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. You know, just bundled all together. I mean, Cody is just such a perfect hero. There's no... I mean, the bad guys are kind of random and somewhat there, but, you know, I mean, the big muscle-bound guys and stuff like that. I mean, for me, just so happy. Lots of boobies, lots of everything that you're looking for. I'm going with a 9.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm going with a 9, too. You know when something's high in schlock appeal, when it can be summarized by its movie poster.
If it's not and it almost poster, has to be.
It's not in this movie.
I got a 7 on it. It's definitely got a lot of schlock appeal because that's what keeps you not from being bored. That said, I do not believe I can follow Nick and watch this hundreds of times.
How many movies can you watch 100 times? Nick is a special human, person. And
not like special. I'm just sitting around entity. Watching it. I always have something on my TV.
Oh, please let your TV be like, I don't want it to be like a flat screen TV. I actually want it to be a tube TV.
I want it to be one of those tube TVs in the console with like the fake drawer handles on the front. That's what I want.
Because then when you're watching these 4x3 movies on this, it's that's perfect. See, that's my vision for Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
I did own this movie on VHS. And it did come in a clamshell, if that helps.
Oh, nice.
Of course it did. Oh, it had to.
That makes me happy.
Clamshell for this movie with all the nudity is especially, you know, fitting.
I think this thing was one car chase away from being perfect on schlock. I think it needed a couple of set pieces, but the fight scenes are amazing. My favorite bit is where he's going to get in a fight, so he pulls the sleeves off his shirt to like show, like, you know, for the gun show, and then immediately takes that shirt off. I had to pause and start laughing and pause to like, you know, clear my eyes after laughing so hard.
I laughed so much in this movie. Yeah, I mean, I assume that was part of the plan. But
so a 9 it is for me as well. Our next category, more heart than budget.
This is one that I would I almost want Nick to go first because I don't know where to where to put this because I feel like, I mean, when I listen to Jack talk about Andy Sidaris, it's like you know that he was just throwing shit at the wall and it didn't matter, but at the same time, the fact that it winds up being so wonderful and so amusing and that he managed to do 12 or whatever of these damn things, that by itself is so amazing. So I'm going to give this a 7.
Ooh, wow.
I'm going high too. I'm going with 8. You know, it's a senseless piece of shit that's just into showing you breasts and saying God. Cool lines, God. But that's all they wanted to do.
And they did it well.
I mean, at no time did they think this was going to, no one on this film was, this is going to win an Oscar. We're really trying hard here. No, they wanted to make what this is and God love them for it.
But like, I mean, everybody, like, I mean, Sybil Danning was spot on. And I mean,
well, Darby, she was Sybil Danning. She just shows up and works.
Well, but I think maybe that was Andy Sidaris's magic was actually taking these people and slotting them into their limited acting ability, just in the right place where it's just like, yep, you can handle this. Do this.
I'd say he was a little bit off with Shane, but that's beside the point.
Well, but I mean, it was like you're supposed to be a muscular guy that kind of acts evil. Well, I mean,
kind of acts evil. Oh, well, we can get to that later.
All right, I'm going to take Andy Sidaris movie. Take everything that Nick just said, and that's my reasoning for giving it a 2.
You know what? I respect that.
We're not going to bother. Just show some breasts.
I get it. I totally get it. And that's why I struggle to...
See, I just reversed my logic on that one. Let's show some breasts. Why bother?
Yeah, and so for me that I leaned more in the Nick category this time.
But you could go either way, so I'm going with that one. leaving Jim here with a very interesting opportunity.
I think that it was just totally shameless just boobs, fancy cars, and let's put them living on a houseboat like from Miami Vice. But I think that they loved all of those things. So 7 is where I ended up on this one. I think they were shameless, but they loved being shameless.
Did Crockett live on a boat?
He did. He did.
Okay, the only boat show I could think of was Riptide. So
yeah, Riptide was the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, he had a houseboat because he had a gator living on it.
Oh, that's right.
Wait, no, I thought the gator living on a boat was Stone Cold.
No, Stone Cold stole it from Miami Vice. I don't know what to tell you. He had a damn gator.
I don't think all of these would do well at a Boogaloo scale.
Oh, we are going to watch Stone Cold.
Well, yeah.
All right. Clear your calendar. Notify your next of kin. It is... The next category is what the fuck moments.
Well, I mean, starting from the opening credits sequence, which, given that they had virtually nothing to do with the movie, I loved them so much, and the fact that the lady who was typing them in, her long fingernails were like so enormously long. I was just like, I don't even know how you managed to type with those freaking claws. But so that was amazing. I don't know if it's what the fuck or not, but the fact that Cody couldn't hit the broadside of a barn with his gun while things were on the move, I thought, like, it's what the fuck, but it's also, what a great story piece that you have this hero, and most heroes, you think about it, and I expected that. I expected to go in and have him be like, boom, 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 you know, like three dead center kind of thing. And instead, nope, barely hits anything. And it, in fact, hits the light at the top of the building. That's great stuff.
I just don't understand this whole sequence. Who was that guy? Why was he so upset with Cody? Why did he show up to practice and fire three shots and leave? That whole thing was just unbelievable.
And then he pops open the case. You see the gun. He's got a fucking speed loader in there. It's like, oh, yeah. Like this is awesome. Like, he's fucking sledgehammer here kind of thing. And then the next thing, you know, boom, crap.
I wanted the movie to be 3D when it opened, and he's like aiming the gun at the camera like that.
So great.
Seems so pleased with his performance.
He was, but he was realistic about the whole thing. That's something that I like. Later on, Regis Philbin and Joy Philbin on the TV. What the fuck? That was straight up what the fuck moment for me, because I don't know that they did anything for the plot other than they were there. And at one point I thought, wow, did you take a show that they were on and then replace their voices? Because it actually stopped sounding like them. But then at the end, you're like, oh, and Regis and Joy as themselves. And it was like, okay, fair enough. We talked about the Buffingtons. Every moment that they showed up, that was what the fuck, straight up. And then for me, one of the great moments was when Cody managed to basically solve everything by having sex with the police officer. he found the camera remote and figured out how to use the camera from that. But it was basically that one moment where they just decided they're going to the guest or the beach house, I guess. They're going there to look for clues. They immediately fall into bed. Good looking for clues there. And then at the end of that, he's like, oh, I've got it. I figured it out.
I found this remote. I assume it connects to a camera. Yeah. It connects to that recorder. And
and then they get attacked. And the moments from that point on.
It's like they started searching the place and they're like, there's not enough DNA here. I know how to add more.
We're gonna leave a lot of DNA. And oh man. So to me, like those are just some of the highlights. I gotta go a 9 with this one.
You know, I got a problem with the WGIF on this one, just because the internal film logic makes me actually go along with most of the WTF in this movie. I wasn't really stopping going, wait a minute. I mean, this is some great WTF in it, but somehow the attempted fellatio during the car chase just seemed to make sense.
Well, it
in this movie.
I suppose
when they're being chased by the helicopter with the gun and he's yelling, they've got a gun, get your head down. She goes, I'll get my head down.
And she's bitching him out for not wanting to like, you know, to get sexy at that moment. It's like she hasn't figured out, hey, there's a dude following us in a helicopter and we're in a high speed chase. I mean, sure, she's a race car driver, so. Yeah, and please do. June Knockers is one of the, you know, she's fine lady.
And a better actor than Shane.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, yeah, June Knockers a lot makes my words fail me.
did you give a score there, Nick?
No, but I'm only going as high as a 6 on this.
Oh, wow. Interesting. I'm going higher. I mean, this is a movie that introduces Cody and shows us that he can't shoot his gun as long as the target's moving, essentially, is what they establish.
Then he doesn't do a very good job even when it's not.
Then they cut to Cortessa, Sybil Danning, and she's sitting there with somebody, and this guy who is part of the yacht club thing is talking about how he knows somebody who can help them out, and so they assume we won't figure it out unless they cut to a picture, a flashback showing us Cody. And I'm like, you know, I think I know who you're talking about. And it's that type of like weird logic that's moving throughout this whole movie that's just unbelievable. Like the fact that the Shane character is sitting there and the husband of the one character that the drag queen character, how he's constantly calling him derogatory, homophobic remarks. And then you find out that he has pictures of the two of them having sex together. Like, you know, like it's just this whole movie. There's the part where the what do you call them again?
Buffingtons.
Thank you. The Buffingtons. They race him. They beat him. They bend over to moon him, but just go down to their underwear. The underwear. There's the three of them. One underwear says "we're." The next underwear says "number," and the last underwear says "number" and "number one," like one. And it shows that, and then it cuts to Cody slowly reading it out loud, moving his lips, going "we're number one." I'm
like. And then the fact that by the end, like, they've got, like, a fucking nitro racer.
Yeah, they blow up their car. Like, the whole thing. How about his car at the end to win that race? He's got, like, he pulls out, like, the, I don't know, it's these pipes at the end in his car. He's like, it's my dad's car. It's souped up. You won't want to race me.
They make with the fire extinguishers sticking out the back.
This movie is insane. So
it's
solid nine. It's so if I could give points, I wouldn't go 10. I still would not go 10, but I'd go like 9.8.
Yes.
Like if we could give points to, but I'm not going to round up. 10 is a 10, and it's not quite a 10, so that's down to 9.
Jim, please break this controversy here, and please mention Sybil Drowning's dress.
Oh yeah, the one where she has a dress that's total side boob, so she goes and takes that off to put on another dress that's total side boob.
Well, that Cody just brings her, like,
yeah, luckily
here's a dress that, you know, should fit you, and there is no dress there. And you say side boob? No, that's under boob in the second. Under boob.
Yeah, you're right. It is.
Oh yeah, the white dress. That must be taped on or something.
She picked on that dress in about 3 seconds.
Yes, there was a lot of editing moments where you were kind of left to be like, oh, okay, I'm gonna have to use my mind to draw the connections between this scene and the next scene.
Using our mind, definitely not our strong suit.
Yeah, no.
I want to talk about the ending of this movie. I want to talk about the resolution of the plot. So, this lovely young lady, they have video, they have a photo. The guy that gets killed has enough time to take a photo of the person who killed him and then put that camera in a drawer with other cameras so the killer accidentally takes the wrong camera.
Even though a flash in your face,
yeah.
You wouldn't take the ball.
But and even though the camera that was had the photo taken on it was the one covered in blood.
Yeah. So he snaps off a quick photo of his own killer, and then they get that photo developed, and they're like, clearly, Lisa did it. Lisa's the killer because we have a photo of her. And then we get to the end, they clear Lisa's name, and it turns out that Sybil Danning, wearing a mask that makes her look like Lisa, underneath a mask that is underneath a stocking.
Well, it's true. If it wasn't for the faces, those two look exactly the same.
Exactly. There's like four inches height and about 35 inches of chest chest measurement between the two of them. But other than that, a perfect match.
Don't forget about the mask dissolving. The only thing close to a special effects system.
Yeah. So Sybil Danning tells Cody what happened. Says this will totally clear her name. So you have a letter that says it, and then you have the mask which dissolves instantly. Where I'm left like, wait, he has no evidence to clear it. Not only did what I just watched make no sense, he still doesn't have any evidence to clear her.
But she's out because, you know, he apparently told somebody and somebody went, good enough for me.
Well, look at the cops. The cops trust him implicitly.
They do. Now, that alone is pretty what the fuck. Yeah.
But I can honestly say you have all thought about this movie way more than I ever have in any of you.
That is the show.
Because I never detected a problem with it. But that was perhaps because they had a montage of all the nude scenes as they were going to credits. Including one that wasn't there for.
That isn't even the most what the fuck thing of the ending of this movie. The most what the fuck for me is that Cody is explaining it to everyone, including Lisa, and Lisa says, well, if it wasn't me and it wasn't Stuart, like, did you think it was you? Is that what did you suspected yourself? Like, I don't know, you got a photo of me doing it. I guess.
it could have been, you know, I do shit all the time, but it could have been.
It wasn't me and it wasn't Stuart. Like, thanks for clearing me because I was suspicious.
Oh, man.
9 for me on this one as well. All right.
Oh, man. You know what else is a big WTF? Is that the one character in the movie that didn't get naked was Maid Marian.
That might have given away that her and Civil Danny are not the same build. by a sizable margin. Memorable moments, Stan.
Oh, well, I know that there's moments of this movie that I'm going to remember, but I am never going to forget the fact that Cody could not hit, you know, shoot anything properly. I am never going to forget June Knockers. Those are, you know, lovingly put into the shrine of movies from KFEB, so... I think that there's probably a sizable amount that I'm going to be able to kind of bring back out of Malibu Express in a couple or 3 years. You know, if we were talking about it, I'd be like, oh, yeah. And I mean, the story, no, that will not be memorable. I don't know that anybody remembers the story really now, but I'm going to go with 6.
I've seen this movie so much, but there's stuff that makes me want to watch it because, well, I don't ever remember the story, but I remember particular scenes like the helicopter chase scene, which is spectacular, and the shower rape scene, which is uncomfortable, and well, the two girls on a boat just popping in to say hi and shower for me. Yeah, I remember this movie quite well sometimes. So I'm going with a 7.
Well, don't forget that they were at least good enough for the ladies out there to get Cody naked showering for no reason as well. Like they did.
He is a good looking man.
He is a good looking man, and they managed.
I don't remember that as well though.
Yeah, they did get him in a shower and a nice slow uptake and for some reason, a close-up on his ass, you know, I mean, look, you know, somebody explain to me what it was. This is clearly softcore porn. It's not a movie. Why is this a Warner Brothers distributing this? What are they doing with this movie?
Oh, man, the VHS days, they were just glory
what
days.
What are they doing with this movie? This is, you think, this is Warner Brothers, Casablanca. You know,
well, wasn't this during the era where the studios were sort of, we don't know what the fuck we're doing anymore. The star system had sort of broken down. And
I don't think that for them, the star system broke down until the late 90s. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing. Yeah, you talk about there's this nude scenes, the helicopter and whatever. Really, most of it's not memorable. Most of it's because nothing really happens in the movie. It's just Cody talking into a recorder, driving around or walking around, nudity. Cody walks talking to reporters. I walk around nude. Nothing happens. It's nothing like totally memorable. I'm only going three.
Oh, low number there. Quite surprising. I think the most memorable thing, the thing I'm going to take away from this film, is Sybil Danning's wardrobe. Oh my God, the outfits they put her in. As you mentioned, we got side boob, we got under boob, we got tons of cleavage. We got her in a bikini a couple of times during the movie.
She never actually got naked because she charged $25,000 to get naked, and Andy Sedaris figured that was $12,500 per breast. This is a quote. And that he could get a lot of other breasts for that $12,500 on screen. I'd like to mention, once again, the total was 72.
the red dress that has both under and cleavage, that's it's a fantastic outfit. So I'm going to go for the six just for that. Our final category is called Crazy Concept.
Well, by itself, boobs is not a crazy concept. We've seen it. We've seen that concept, you know, several times before. So I can't go too high based on the fact that this is just an excuse to see boobs. But the fact that they attempted to tell this crazy, Russians and blackmail and, you know, selling technology and all that stuff. They, you know, there's such a loose attempt at a story and a private detective and all this extra gack in there. I can't go high, but I'm going to go with a four.
Wow. Yeah, the extra gack is where I go a little bit higher. It was said earlier, this is just softcore porn. And I disagree with that. Andy Sedaris seems to take just as much pleasure with the other stuff, not plot, but he likes the cars. He throws in the stupid humor with a race.
He manages to get somebody naked every time. Yes.
I'm saying it's not just softcore porn. There is just as much other stuff in there to make this movie watchable. I mean, if it was just softcore porn, you wouldn't need the whole thing with his gun and like that. You wouldn't need the tape recorder. You wouldn't have all this other almost random stuff that Andy Sedaris just thought it was cool, so he threw it in there. I'm going as high as a six on this, actually.
Yes, you would. Okay, here's the thing. clearly, this movie is very interesting because the scores were not in line with each other. I got an eight. I think when you take a movie with no way it should go 10 minutes and make it go 100 with nothing happening and yet still make it entertaining, the fact that you just did this movie with no plan to do it and yet just consistently went, I need a solution to this, breasts, and and got 100 minutes. To me, that's a crazy concept. Just the concept that anybody would make this movie in the first place. So I'm going eight.
I think what's weird to me about this movie is that the pitch for this movie is like a Magnum PI type investigator, and the Russians are getting hold of our technology and someone's helping them. And then there's like a Murder, She Wrote type mystery of, the rich old woman who is being ripped off by someone in her family. And none of that is actually important to the movie that happens. So
I kept on, you know what? I expected at the end, because they make a big deal that she broke her leg 3 months ago. That's why she's in a cast. And she's in the wheelchair. So I kept on thinking she was the murderer and she really, her leg was healed and that this was her excuse and they had that out. But no, that would have.
It's such a collection of things that are not important. All of these things that there is no explanation, and they're not vital to anything that resolves by the end of the film. So I'm going with an 8 because what the movie that we have has very little reliance on the concept and the pitch.
Did they ever really explain why they the government? I think it was the government hired Cody in the first place.
No, the older woman hires Cody to find, because she's suspicious that something is happening in her house.
Okay, so what's the government doing?
We don't know.
We don't know.
All we know is
the government's there.
Kills them. When she kills and she says Lisa's innocent because I killed them, here's my confession, but you can't do anything because I'm with the government. And it turns out that he was selling stuff to the Russians. Like, so you can't. So I'm in Hawaii where you can, but nobody can touch me because I work for the government. Like that's what Cortessa says. Like, I.
Oh, man.
Never has so much effort in the last 5 minutes gone into explaining a movie where so little effort went into the first 95 minutes.
It's about the depth of your average murder she wrote through most of it.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. It's definitely got that TV mystery could be wrapped up in 44 minutes kind of thing. And
Columbo kind of All right, and every season we have 6 secret modifiers.
Oh, really? 4 secret modifiers, because if you haven't figured out the other two by now.
So, well, that doesn't really have a good flow to it. We have 2 modifiers plus 4 secret modifiers, but I guess. I'll try that next time. for the pedantic in the audience. This film only has 1 of them. It is over 95 minutes, so it gets a -1 for that. Which gives us a final total for Malibu Express of 68.5, which puts it top 20, tied with Space Mutiny.
Sorry, what was it again? One more time, the score?
68.5. And as I look at this, I realize that the Octagon is does not have a few movies in it, so it's probably just outside the top 20.
Wow.
68.5. Pretty respectable, though.
Actually, I think that's about right.
I'm glad.
I would have liked it for it to edge out Space Mutiny, but
I don't know what happens if it's not okay.
I mean, it edged out. The
process seems complicated.
It edged out Gymkhana, which, you know, I mean, both are fantastic. So there's
it's just a shade above Santa's sleigh, and Gymkhana comes in below, right below Preppies.
Yeah, it seems like we found our rhythm, and let's keep talking about the mustaches. What do we got going next?
Well, next up, we're moving to the future, class of 1999. You know, when the world is a horrible place. So we're gonna move into the Stacy Keach mustache. There's, you know. Stacy Keach has the hair that
yeah,
that
you
truly...
can't talk about the neck. No.
You don't start. Yeah. It's way too early to get it. Well, let's go to scoring on the next movie. Yeah. Come on, let's just go.
It's one big long mustache season. We're not stopping at all.
The mustache marathon.
Class of 1999 is our next movie. So. And I'm already excited to talk about that. So we better move on. Is anybody else? Okay. Well, let's see now. I don't even want to get ahead of myself. I'm already doing too much of that. Jim, tell the folks where they can find us.
All right. We are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. And you can visit our podcast sponsors, We Talk Podcasts, on Facebook and Twitter to keep up to date on what's happening with the show. And also, WeTalkPodcast.com is home of our podcast and home of The Octagon, which is our ongoing chart that puts every film split up by the 5 categories as well. So if you love a crazy concept, if you love the what the fuck moments, then you can sort them that way as well as by their final score.
All right. Well, moving on, in season 7, where we present the free mustache rides, and everybody, you know, this is, it's like a magical, you know, mystery tour of mustache rides. So I'm having fun. Malibu Express was a great time. Class of 1999 is another thing altogether. So for Jim, for Jack, for Nick, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu. Thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Meet Cody Abilene, a private eye with an adoring public. He's an undercover operator.
Hi, I'm May, and this is my friend Faye.
With a knack for getting at the bare facts.
Yeah.
This is the Countess, a government agent with her own special skills. And together, they're both headed for danger on the Malibu Express.
This is Kingy.
In the world of high rollers, low blows, and dangerous curves, Cody's playing a deadly new game.
Go ahead, make my day.
Sorry, babe, but I gotta have some water.
The FBI wants him back.
No one should suspect anything.
I'm gonna nail him with a grenade.
The Russians want him dead, and the girls from the yacht next door just want him.
I understand you're a private investigator.
And Cody Abilene always gets his girl.
Marvelous.
So park your car, hide your guns, and lock up your daughters. Cody Abilene just got another case. He's hard to catch.
You are continental.
Hard to keep.
Scoot your butts outside.
Hard to figure. And impossible to resist. Starring Sybil Danning, Darby Hinton, and 5 Playboy Playmates.
But I didn't just bring you in for sex. I have a few things to fill you in on.
Make tracks for the Malibu Express. No matter where you're headed, it goes all the way.
Would I help any woman in distress? Yes, ma'am, I would.